This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 188. In this episode, we're going to listen to a question and answer session from a user group panel with the Austin, Texas SharePoint User Group, live April the 5th, 2017.
What if you could take any process your teams use to get work done and make it happen automatically? What if you could save countless hours and help people work better together? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. And it flows in and out of the tools that you use every day. With Nintex, work flows so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever.
Good day, everybody. This is Andrew. Just like last week where CJ flew solo, I'm flying solo this week. This episode is going to be very different from anything we've done in the past. I wanted to try something new this week. On April the 5th, 2017 in Austin, Texas, at the SP TechCon conference, the Austin SharePoint User Group, Austin, Texas SharePoint User Group, had a panel session where we had four panelists answer questions from the audience. And the people on the panel were Mark Cashman from Microsoft and Microsoft Office MVPs, Laura Rogers, Eric Schupps, and yours truly, Andrew Connell. What the questions primarily focused around governance questions and usability and capabilities, a lot of adoption questions as well, specifically focused around SharePoint groups, around SharePoint team sites, and the Microsoft Teams product, among a bunch of other things, including, like I said, a little bit of governance stuff and a little bit of usability and just some capabilities there. It was a very good discussion that we had. A lot of questions were asked and we went through a lot of answers, but this episode is a little bit on the longer side as well. Just want to give everybody a heads up of that. It took about a little over an hour, hour and 20 minutes for the user group. And so we're going to skip all the normal preamble stuff that CJ and I normally do, and we're just going to dive right into the QA panel. So some of the questions we did have to cut out, and some of the answers we cut out too, because the people that were asking the questions didn't wait to have a microphone in front of them. And so the questions didn't come up in the recording, and the answers just kind of sound a little out of context. So I decided to go ahead and pull those out, edit those pieces out. But aside from that, just go ahead and turn this loose and hope everybody enjoys the show.
I am so excited when these guys come to town. These are some of my favorite people in the community. Not just these four, but the SharePoint MVPs I work with are amazing community contributors. Mark Cashman, not an MVP, but an amazing community contributor, working with Microsoft, focusing on OneDrive and Delve and other things like that. A great person to talk to about the concept of SharePoint and Office 365, SharePoint Online, how to use it, how to drive it deeper into your organization. Wonder Laura, thank you for coming. So Laura has been working in her own training company and launching with her husband's help. Well, you help your husband, yeah. I know that. Yeah. We all know that. Eric Schupps, the man, the myth. Thank you for coming down from Dallas. I know you had to drive I-35, which is not
I'd almost rather fly.
I would too. And then, of course, Andrew Connell, great friend of mine. These guys have been friends of mine for years. And the thing is, when I started with SharePoint, Andrew and Eric were already deep into it and just absolutely welcomed me into this community that is SharePoint. And that's what I love about this. We go to other conferences, we see the SQL team, we're sad for them, because the SharePoint team is so rocking. We have so much fun. And I think we bring the sexy to Office 365, right? I mean, really, Office 365 is nice, but mail's boring. SharePoint's cool. Right? And then we get Delve and we have the other add-ons. So that's kind of what tonight is about, is having industry experts across the different workloads that you have in Office 365. But I am going to have a couple of ground rules for today. For instance, you're not allowed to self-promote. So, like, for instance, I wouldn't say that I've been working on a new hybrid class that's going to be released in June. Okay?
I wouldn't say that we have a May 17th event coming up, SharePoint Virtual.
Exactly. And Laura wouldn't say that she has training classes coming up online and available. Eric, new products available,
I
assume? Oh, I thought we weren't allowed to self-promote.
Well, you could talk about Andrew's new class that's coming out.
So I can't talk about Voitanos?
No, you can't talk about
Voitanos. Oh, I can, but you can't.
Yeah, I can't.
Your new training.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you get the idea. We're happy to take questions from the audience to drive this. I've got Jim with a mic here. A couple of questions that came in from the interwebs that we'll start with, just one to get it going, and then please, if you guys have questions as we go.
Before we start, I have a question. How is it that Laura Rogers no longer has a name and has just become a Twitter handle?
You're Cheyenne's dad to me, so.
All right, well, fair enough. You know.
Oh, and by the way, we are recording too. So, but Andrew's the editor. So just in case, you know, he'll have the cough button ready just in case. All right. So the first one we have is, with the evolution of the teams and group services, do you see collaboration within Office 365 shifting away from SharePoint? Mark.
I never want to be the Microsoft guy answering first, because I think the answer is definitely no. But it does mean that SharePoint is not your collaboration solution holistically. It certainly could be, and it's one of those things that if you don't go to Office 365, there's a lot of limited access to some of the new technology, so you wouldn't get Teams and groups and other things. So if you're an on-prem customer, certainly don't devalue the way that you can leverage SharePoint and SharePoint alone. But if you're in Office 365 and you're open to kind of moving beyond SharePoint or being inclusive of what you do in SharePoint to other means that maybe SharePoint hasn't focused on or maybe doesn't do quite as well, when you think of conversations, you know, it has never been the strength of the SharePoint social news feed to be the holistic way that people can chat, interact, and bring in other people externally and share, you know, via that common medium that is just that type of way. But what I'd say is the part where we are the glue that binds, and to kind of look at the GA launch of Microsoft Teams, we really worked hard to be what is it that we are when other people use those tools. And we've boiled it down to that we are a consistent content service for Yammer, for Office 365 groups, for Microsoft Teams, even OneDrive for Business, things that are platformed on top of SharePoint, commonly are stored in a SharePoint document library. So if you're in Teams, every team gets a site collection. Every site collection, of course, has a default document library, and every channel that you create in Teams is a folder in that document library. So that's where SharePoint plays an important role in terms of content collaboration. We left the discussions for those other guys.
Laura, do you have a counterpoint to that or an addition?
anything she says can be invalid.
Well, I was going to say, anything he says yes to, you got to say no to.
No. Yeah, well, exactly. Teams and groups are SharePoint. So the great thing about SharePoint is you have that single version of the truth for any given file, whatever you're working on. So if you're interfacing to that file through Teams, I mean, that's fine. Then you can have a conversation about it. It's just a nice add-on. And I had it's funny, I had a customer the other day say, I had a whole conversation with them. They said they wanted to go to Teams instead of Slack, that they have SharePoint. They never use it. They're looking at Teams, though. And I had this whole conversation with them that Teams is SharePoint.
You know?
And we had this whole other file server thing we do for our files. We don't use SharePoint. And then they came back a week later. Well, we want to go ahead and start talking about Teams, but we're going to leave the SharePoint part out. I'm like, Okay. Whatever you say.
Hey, we're happy to be behind
the scenes. It's all the same thing.
So do you all know the difference between, do you know what Teams is?
People together.
Get some nods. So I've got a couple of no's back here. So Mark, in a very, well, I won't cut you off. What is Teams? For those who don't know.
I think before answering the what is Teams, you have to understand what is Office 365 Groups, because it is the umbrella to what Microsoft Teams is. So Groups is a membership list of people that are going to be working together. It could be structurally they are in the same hierarchy, or more commonly, it's just a group of people working together on a project that just need to then be bound to use the same set of experiences or store the files in the same place or use the same shared calendar. So in the concept of groups, which is just a list of people that are going to be working together, you've got your owners, members, and for SharePoint, you also add viewers. You have a place to chat. So you could do that in email. You could send a group email, and we support that. That's really another component of groups, which we call the shared inbox. But when it comes to Teams, and oftentimes different types of teams work in different ways, if you have a chat, and sometimes it's very locations-based, if you're all at an event working together, you're not just back in the office, or you're very dispersed across the country, there are some people in some teams that just work in the chat mode. Maybe a younger crowd, maybe not. And they just need to real quickly say, hey, you got this? Yeah, I got that. What about this? What about that? Do you have the proposal? Here it is. And that's just how they work. And they don't need the full header and the footer of an email. But it is a component of groups. So the list of members have a place to chat. That's Microsoft Teams. Within Teams, there's a whole UI that allows you to easily share files. Like Laura said, you're sharing a file from SharePoint. Or when you bring in a new file, you're putting it into SharePoint so that everybody's accessing that same file. But then right alongside it, you have shared calendar, a shared planner plan if you use that, a Power BI dashboard for that group if you leverage Power BI, and on and on and on. And it's just the list of people, which is groups, have common access to be able to access those particular workloads. The Teams component is the chat-based workload. Okay.
I thought it was just for people who like to goof off with GitHub.
Yeah, that's right. It's pretty fun for that,
that's
too.
That's what Slack is.
Yeah. It's pretty meme-y.
It's very meme-y.
Meme-y?
That's right. As opposed to your OneDrive, which is me.
Right.
My me.
Library.
There it is. Library. That's right. So question at the back.
We use Skype
yep.
to talk to each other. In that way, we share files. And so how is that different?
So it's a great question, and granted, you guys can jump in at any time. But if you think about it, Skype is really good for one-to-one or one-to-many. You can always schedule or create a group chat. You could have a high-end, you know, video chat. You could have a one-to-many type meeting where you're presenting and you have a chat-based component to that. But typically, it doesn't persist over time. And the way they built Skype is I'm on now, I have a need now, and I want to then chat, and then we're out. And there's some part of the conversation that next time you talk to that same person, it might pop up. But there really isn't the consistent, persistent chat for the group. When you join Microsoft Teams, and they have different channels, so you think about different chats, you might have 20 people that are a part of one Microsoft team. I'm waiting for you guys to just kill me.
Is that like a group?
It's a group.
Team group.
It's a team group.
So our naming aside.
Where does Mimi go?
it's the teamy Mimi. But to answer your question honestly, it is persistent chat. Skype was not built in a persistent way.
We use Yammer as well.
Huh? She went there.
I didn't know we were throwing profanity around.
We'll probably use that.
So
no, Teams is good.
Seems useful.
And including Hyderabad.
Yep. So there are use cases where multiple technologies can solve the same problem. Where I see Yammer at its best is the ability to broadcast a finished message from one to many. Or be a communities of interest where I don't know who is interested in topic A or B. I don't know everybody around the company, but everybody seems to have subscribed to this one particular group. It's quite large, maybe 8,000 people. And if I tried to pay attention to actually get work and collaborate with them, it'd be really noisy and chatty. But if I turn to my Microsoft team, typically smaller in size, it will be people that I will directly ask, do you have this? No other context. And their answer will be yes. Next Thursday. Whereas in Yammer, I might say, does anybody actually have a customer reference where I could speak to somebody who's done hybrid search? And particularly, I want somebody in the East region of, you know, X. And then the response I get may come from somebody I have no clue who they are. Yep. So there are use case scenarios. I don't think they're fully articulated in the products when you first launch them and start using them, especially if you have those questions of what to use when, by which usually anybody not Microsoft does a better job at explaining. Right. But when you start actually using them, they really are distinctive. You know, it's the same as when would I text you? When would I instant message you? When would I write you an email? When would I write you a letter? When would I call you on the phone?
The last two, never.
He never accepts my calls, by the way. Is Mimi there?
So I think that the challenge for us a lot of times is many of us carry our legacy SharePoint experience into this product of Office 365, which we know is supported by SharePoint Online. But we could also simply go into a brand new customer who has no experience with any of these products and say, we can use Teams and Groups and not use terms like SharePoint Online, Listen Library, Document Library, and achieve their business requirements by using these assembled, I won't use the phrase cobbled together, tools that allow us to collaborate more effectively than just a SharePoint 2016 team site would allow us to do. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so.
So I think it depends on your business approach to your question. I think it depends on what business requirement you're trying to solve and how you're trying to get your team together and how big it is. Would you agree that size of the team does play into the solution?
Are you asking if size matters in a custom deployment of SharePoint?
I didn't say it, but you did. Awesome.
We had a question over here.
Go for it.
I was just wondering, because I've been in Office 365, and this might just be for you, Mark, or for anybody else. People do get confused when they're chatting through like SharePoint or something, you know, because now chat will allow you to chat with people through other applications. And they're not sure if it's, you know, a Skype backend or a team backend or something like that. And so I was just wondering if there's a single unified platform, or if they're completely separate, or?
Yeah, they are pretty separate. And if you think about the main three, Yammer has its own repository of where they store the chat component of the conversation. And it's no measure in terms of if you were to dig in, it's a Yammer service. And they are moving more and more into the common data center, but it is its own store for the chat component. More and more, the content in all of them is SharePoint. That's what I mentioned earlier. I don't know all the logistics for Microsoft Teams, but it is an instance in Azure, and they talk about it being obviously compliant and secure, but they also moved out into its own unique proprietary solution by nature of how they wanted to perform against the competitors, how they wanted to be unique against, you know, even Skype itself. It is the Skype team behind Microsoft Teams, interestingly enough, but they didn't use the same store, and they would tell you the same thing I'm telling you. It's a unique instance in Azure tied to your tenant. And then, of course, email is the Exchange backend. So no different from the shared inbox. It is an inbox for the group. It happens to be an Exchange inbox, Exchange Online inbox.
So let me go back to mail here. So hearing a lot about SharePoint framework, and I guess the gist of the question is, why do I care? And what can it do for me?
Does this mean we get to talk now?
Yeah. Watch this.
There's a question for this end of the table.
Actually, either of you, because the why do I care or what's in it for me could go to you, Shups, and the what can I do with it can go to Andrew. Either way, however you guys want to split it up.
Fair enough. So why do I care?
SharePoint framework, is it only in the cloud? Can I get it in?
SharePoint framework is only in the cloud for the moment. He keeps changing the rules on us.
I am. I'm the moderator. I'm allowed
for
to.
The moment, it's only in Office 365. Whether or not that comes down on premises remains to be seen. What is it? It's another arm of our development model that we have for SharePoint and Office 365. It's probably the model that embraces the cloud more fully than any of the development models that we've had in the past. It bridges a gap where the app model didn't fit for customization and intranet type of scenarios. Why do I care? Because it's the way that we're moving forward from a customization perspective. It's a pages and parts model that will give us things like the modern Teams experience that's built on top of the framework. Some of the announcements that you'll see at the May 17th event will showcase some of the capabilities of what the framework can do. From a developer's perspective, it's another tool in the toolbox. You'll use it or not use it depending on what your requirements are. But if you're working primarily in Office 365 and you want to have more control over customization or content that's on a page, parts that render better than the client app parts do from the add-in model, et cetera, then you should absolutely care about the framework and start learning it now and get ahead of the curve to get working with us coming. There's a lot of stuff. We've really only, I think, scratched the surface of what we can do here. It's sort of the tip of the iceberg at the moment. So it's a great time to jump in and start learning about this stuff as it grows and continues to mature.
My perspective on it is that it's bringing client-side development to a first-class citizen as SharePoint development. It's giving us a way to reliably package up and deploy client-side stuff. SharePoint is a cloud-first product, and it's clear that going server-side is just not the way to go through and extend a product that way, at least server-side customizations that Microsoft would be hosting inside of Office 365. Office 365, that's not their strong suit to host custom solutions. That's somebody like Azure. That's one of the public clouds. Office 365 is there to provide SaaS-based offerings like Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, and to be able to give us a collaboration experience as well, among others. So I think in the past, we had really two ways to do client-side customizations. We had server-side customizations. We've had that forever to farm solutions, sandbox solutions, different types of add-in models. But the client-side solutions, what we saw in the last version, once SharePoint or Office 365 really started to take off, was a lot of customers were banging their head against the wall trying to figure out, how can I do certain changes in my SharePoint environments with the models that we had available to us? None of the models provided us the options that we gave up that we needed. So what people started doing is started injecting JavaScript into the pages. And that model, using the script editor web part, the content editor web part, it's fine and it works, but it's brittle and it's not reliable in the sense that it's not repeatable. Like if I can't deploy something and I can't make it a repeatable process, and more than a Word document that says, go do these things at 12:30 in the morning on a Friday night.
Right.
That's not viable. So what this does is it takes the stuff that we used to do as client-side solutions and allows us to package those up and deploy them the same way we would any other kind of reliable kind of a thing. That's one. Why should you care about it? Because client-side development is the way that you're going to customize SharePoint going forward. You'll always be able to interact with it through the APIs. from some server-side stuff. But if you want to customize the SharePoint experience, client-side development is the way you're going to end up doing it. It's the right way to do it. It's not just how Microsoft is doing it with 365, but that's how other products are doing it too. It's an industry thing. And then the other part is, you know, why should you care about it? Or in addition to what I just said, you're not going to be able to use the old way of customizing SharePoint, like the old way we did web parts with Farm or Sandbox solutions. You won't be able to do that in the new modern experiences. They don't translate down to the mobile experiences. They don't translate to the new modern pages, modern team sites, modern this, modern that. What's it going to be next? Postmodern?
I don't know, but I'm about to get tired of modern. I'll tell you that.
So you're only going to be able to push this stuff out, have these customizations, are only going to be able to live on modern pages. So if you keep doing stuff the old way, I mean, you kind of have a certain lifetime of how long that's going to last. I will say, you know, Eric said that, you know, we will see when it comes down on-prem or, you know, when that happens. Microsoft has said that that's going to come, that they've committed to it in the roadmap. They said it's going to come down, I think it was like second half of this calendar year was what they committed to. But I mean, I would expect for that to be something like a feature pack or something, or something along those lines, to where it will be on-prem for SharePoint 2016 customers.
ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 5 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check us out at ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
Speaking about persistence of files and stuff with regard to the previous question you said, Skype is not persistent. But if you were using Office Groups or Microsoft Teams and you were chatting and somebody attached a file in one of those chats, is that a reference to a document that's residing in SharePoint? And so that's my first part of the question.
Mm-hmm. So it's two scenarios. If the file is already a part of the group, so it's in the document library already, and you just want to reference it in the group chat, you can say, hey, I've got the sales proposal, click attachment, and you really are just picking the file from the group's files. And then, of course, it will be, like you said, just a reference link to it. But if for some reason the file was sent to you as an email attachment from somebody else, you downloaded it to your C drive or it just lived on a file server somewhere, and you said, hey, everybody, there's this great document that I want you to check out. When you put it into the group chat, it'll put an instance of the document into SharePoint for that group's document library, which is a default document library for the team. And then if it's a separate channel within Teams, it just gets a new folder created and that gets put in that folder.
Second part of the question is, what is the idea behind the scope or length of an Office group or a Microsoft team? Like, is it meant or intended for it to last only as long as a project, a particular project duration? And then if a group gets deleted, is all the data related to that group deleted? Or same thing with, you know, same question with regard to the Microsoft team.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to repeat probably what Laura and Sue Hanley would promote as best practices.
Same thing as a SharePoint site, pretty much same concept.
Yep.
How long is your SharePoint team site going to last?
Yeah, there's nothing that will cycle it into something that will force you down a rabbit hole that you don't want to go to. There is governance capabilities of it where you can set duration, and any group that gets created a year later will ping the owner of the group, do you want to keep it, yes or no? Or there's maybe some automatic policies. But also to know that when you delete a group, literally if you go into any of the workloads and delete the group, you are deleting every experience that the group has access to. The team site, the shared inbox, the calendar, the planner plan. It deprovisions itself when you delete. So obviously take that into consideration.
Or site collection, yeah.
Yep.
Because it's stored in there.
Yep. Yeah. And then it moves into the each workload's deletion process, which for us goes into the recycle bin. And
an Office 365 group goes in the recycle bin?
The documents and everything in SharePoint. To recover the group is something that the team is considering.
Oh, okay. That doesn't exist. Okay.
Yeah. I believe the answer is yes, but I believe it's something they haven't standardized in terms of being able to have it be a fully supported scenario. But I know the team is getting a lot of feedback on it. And we're getting feedback already from up in the...
the cheap seats.
I thought you were only interested in...
Yeah. Ooh, take a picture of that again.
Before I ask my first question, or my real question, just to follow up.
When you is this a warm-up question?
When you delete that, it doesn't archive automatically?
Of course, from a backup perspective, everything is backed up, you know, in a 14-day window. If you never delete anything, but you maybe delete a file or you delete a calendar... something. It is, of course, in the same policy of Exchange and SharePoint Online where you can recover the file after 90 days, you can do all that. But if you delete a group, meaning you want to delete the instance of the group and everything that goes along with it, then it moves it into a full deprovisioning of the group and all of the assets that were associated to it.
That deprovision is still recoverable 2 years later.
I don't think 2 years later.
See, because you have potential legal ramifications when a project goes wrong and all of a sudden you don't have that information, the communication path.
So that, but we're talking about
all kinds of
if the content has been deleted actively by the customer. Microsoft doesn't delete it.
No, I know. I realize that.
But if if your end user, whether they knew better or not, chose to delete it and it gets deleted, it'll go through a deprovisioning process.
My question...
That was the warm-up, by the way.
Yeah, that was the warm-up.
Okay.
Because you sparked something.
Okay.
I have... the potential use of what's going to be called SolidWorks Designer Conceptual, which basically does the same kind of thing that you're trying to do with SharePoint Teams. Allows quick design through their interface of anything from your hard drive to a house, okay? Mm-hmm. And it has the same kind of chat paths and so forth that you're developing within SharePoint. Do you guys have plugins to work in these other environments to allow collaboration, storage within projects of different applications like SolidWorks or even my MRP as well? Do you have that kind of stuff? Or are you developing
it? I'm going to first default to my developer friends down there. And they can consider about connectors and APIs in terms of the Graph API and beyond. Not to drag you guys in too quickly.
Teams has an extensibility story around creating custom tabs, and that has yet to be fully fleshed out as to what all those capabilities will be. But I think it's those types of scenarios that are a good fit for the extensibility story there about connecting to third-party services, building or buying sets of connectors to consolidate with those. Whether that one sounds like a bit of an edge case to me, so maybe that would be something you'd have to get done custom, but to other major third-party content provider services or whatnot, that's perfectly feasible inside of the API structure.
Yeah, you look at it from two different sides, right? Do you want that, the stuff that's inside, I didn't pick up the product name, but
SolidWorks.
If you want to pull that stuff and surface that in Teams, yeah, there's a way that you can extend Teams like Eric said, channels and stuff like that. If you want to have stuff from Teams be exposed inside of their product, then yeah, the Microsoft Graph is going to give you access to everything inside of Office 365. So you're going to be able, and all the data in Teams is going to be in Office 365. So you're going to be able to get it either way. There's not like a out of the box like Snap-in or something like that from either one of the companies that I'm aware of that does that. But there's plenty of APIs on that Microsoft provides, both an extensibility point and an API to get the data out from their side. For the most part, everything in 365 is pretty well exposed via APIs to get to make changes to, make modifications to. There's not much that is not exposed. I mean, the only thing that I can really think of is there's a lot of PowerShell commandlets that do it, but a lot of like the management or and the instrumentation of a lot of 365 stuff, there's some gaps with like the REST APIs, but I mean, it's pretty well covered.
Yeah, and if you want to send, you know, one of the developers or yourself, you can go to graph.microsoft.io. And it's a great resource to be able to see, not only to learn about the Graph API, but really the what's behind it. Files API, the video API, the email API, the calendar API, it's a big long list of how to access the data, how to pull it out and render it in your custom solution.
Yeah, it even has a little line where you can type in the page and test things out and play around with and see what gets retrieved when you put your own.
Hey, I have a session on this tomorrow morning, so we don't need to. I'm talking about all that.
No plugging, Andrew.
Oh, okay. So
can you write a flow for that?
Let's get a little thingy on the site.
Yeah, kind of a thingy.
That was very developer of you, Laura.
So we did accept some questions, and I love these kinds of questions. So I have to read this one. I'm going to read it verbatim.
Oh boy.
Okay, but then I'm gonna put rules around how we answer.
Ooh.
Okay, so here's the question. The question is, I recently came across an issue on an inherited SharePoint farm, because of course
they're always inherited.
Wasn't mine.
It's your friend's farm.
Yeah, it's my friend's farm.
I'm asking for my IT friend.
Where the original owner used their super user credentials for a service account and then left.
Definitely a friend.
When the object was deleted, SharePoint crashed. So what is the biggest thing? This is the actual question. What is the biggest thing you'd advise against? Which obviously is a very broad question. So from your world, from your the voice that you have in the community, whether it's Andrew with the dev hat,
Eric with the actual hat, Sheriff Aaron over there.
So two things for either Office 365 or two don'ts for either Office 365 or SharePoint on-prem.
Don't ask a developer to fix this. This is not a developer problem. Don't ask a developer to write something to fix this.
Okay. But not even related specifically to the question, but like, Eric, I want to stand up a SharePoint farm. What are the two things I should never do?
Again, I'll go back to the developer thing.
You go back to the developer thing?
Don't let me stand up a farm.
Only two?
Yeah, I know. That's just it. That's the hard part. It's only two.
Wow. Just stand up a farm without actually going through a planning process?
So don't not plan.
Yeah. Just certainly don't stick it under the desk anymore. I mean, this is 2017 after all. We do have some best practices. I think I'd almost echo what AC is. Don't expect a consultant or a resource to be an expert on everything SharePoint, right? The product is too big, too broad. I can't keep up with all the Office 360. Don't ask me about Dell. Don't ask me about Sway. I have no idea.
Right.
There's some things that I do know, and I'm really good in that area, and that's it. There's just too much breadth. So you can't expect one person in your organization or even an external consultant to have all the answers for SharePoint. It's just simply not going to happen. You got to bite it off in chunks and find the right people that know about the various aspects of the product to advise you.
Just firsthand experience, the first few questions that came in, I learned a lot from Mark's answers. There's no way I could have said anything against that because I don't know. As a consultant, as a one-person consultant, I can't use Teams. It doesn't work very well for people outside of your tenant. So I don't have a lot of experience with it. It's the dev side. Standing up a farm,
Right.
That's not my.
Test
account from now on is going to be called Mimi.
Mimi. That's right. No, it's like, oh, okay, so you know Office 365. So Power BI. Wait, whole different tool set.
Go
right?
talk to John White.
Whole different tool set.
I'm just waiting for the Windows 10 question.
So, Laura, do you have a two don'ts?
From my perspective, a big don't is don't give any more than two people full permission control on a site.
And so that goes to your question, if I delete it. Well, if you are the admin and you delete it, that's governance. You see what I mean? Is that did that person have the rights to delete it, and then did they delete it? We have admin auditing now, so we can find out who deleted that thing. You definitely do.
Yeah, eDiscovery is really useful. It can find stuff all throughout Exchange and SharePoint.
Yeah.
You gotta keep them in there, though.
But you can set up, I assume that the administrator can set up ways to archive that stuff, even if someone deletes it. It maybe have a plugin that says, all right, if the owner deletes it, the first thing it does is archive it to a archive location and then deletes it from
if they delete it, how about don't let them, don't give them the, don't give them delete the site button, don't give them that access in the first place.
Right, I understand that, but
that would be user voice. I would go to user voice and make sure that gets in there so that they, because that's the thing that has been happening with Office 365 is the number of new features that have come out as a result of user voice has been astounding. The reshuffling of the priorities of features that associated with user voice has been really amazing. And I've seen what I think are trivial things written into user voice, and then suddenly there's 6,000 votes on it.
Right.
Because like Andrew said, I'm a small shop. I work with a few people in a team site. I don't do groups. But all of a sudden, somebody has a pain, and they're using 5,000 people in a team site and having that. So user voice would be where that...
Yeah, and I think the important thing about user voice is it's not just the product team looking at it. It's feature crews looking at it. So it's people looking for specific things, how they can improve their thing, not holistically the product team, which sometimes makes it feel like my feature won't get looked at. But a feature crew that focuses on search and search alone absolutely will read any feature that's focused on search. And there's a lot of feature crews that are looking for good ideas and obviously real feedback.
Well, there are some people, especially fresh out of college, who don't understand the reason for compliance, don't understand the reason why recalls happen and why that data is necessary. So you have to train them, and two, you try to set up rules to prevent them from getting you into trouble.
Yes.
And it sounds like part of the training will be governance, if that's important.
She wants to hear my second one.
Thank you.
Just to circle back on what not to do when standing up a new farm, don't use your own account.
Yes, of course. Don't use your own account.
Tip of the day.
Farm account.
And my thing for standing up a new farm is consider Office 365 before you stand up a new farm on-prem, because there's a lot that it does that doesn't require you to stand up your own farm.
I think one thing, if so you...
Laura
if,
has number two.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. So
number two, don't use InfoPath.
Oh. Says the former InfoPath guru.
Yeah, that's wow. right.
Yes.
That's right.
Her hashtag, her Twitter handle used to be InfoLaura. I would go just off one step after Matt's, choose Office 365, or certainly consider it. If you do go Office 365 for SharePoint, and I do this with a little bit of a head hung low, make sure you get your tenant name the way that you want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So many IT departments just pound in a tenant name and then it doesn't get released. It escapes. Yeah. Yeah, get your tenant name.
If it's a test tenant, do Coca-Cola test, and you'll be happy later.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, what you're saying, Mark, is that we can take a rocket up into space and land it back on the pad that it came from, but we can't change a URL in Office 365.
Right. I'll take that one.
Define we.
And, I was being inclusive.
And if somebody else has your domain,
yeah,
you can't get it from them.
You gotta. They will change it, but it's painful. It's painful.
So I have some more questions from earlier, but are there any other questions in the audience? Go for it.
I have to continue this thread for much, you know, with regard to retention and specifically your comment, Mark, about when you nuke a group, mm-hmm. it starts this cascading of deletion of information, specifically yep. I thought it was a team site, not a site collection.
A group is a site collection.
Okay, yep. Thank you.
Yep.
What about retention policies that have been deployed and specifically in online? Does that process get trumped by those retention policies?
If you think about just a generic, not connected to Office 365 groups site collection, you certainly can set your policies and if something does get deleted, it can go through your sort of assigned required deletion policy. The group's team is also considering both from a when you sign up.
That's the people at Microsoft who are working on groups.
That's right. Sorry. Yeah.
The group's team
talks through Yammer and chat. Right.
I just want to know where Mimi works.
It sounded fine coming out of my mind, but then when you play it back, it just, you know. So there is a set of people at Microsoft who think about how they can improve the admin user experience for the thing we call Office 365 groups. But they really do think about the different scenarios that they'll then march towards. The trick for that team is they are primarily an Azure AD deliverable. How do we manage the object in Azure AD that then has a lot of plumbing to connect to in a provisioning state, creating your team site that is a site collection, creating a group inbox, which is in Exchange Online, a planner instance in a plan in Planner, you know. So deprovisioning all of that, the easiest thing, the most common thing that people commonly want is we're getting rid of it. To cascade that down to now what people are providing as feedback is, no, we actually want that to be something that we want to notify the user before something gets deleted. You know, are you sure about that? Or delay, or you know, somebody else has to approve it. So that team is looking at how do they add better governance. And my colleague, his name in marketing used to be Christoph Eisinger, is now on the engineering team. That same one I mentioned that we don't need to repeat the name. And he's absolutely thinking through what is governance of groups. And that means what is the governance of all aspects of groups.
But right now, the deprovisioning by default is on and will happen, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Can I take an existing team site and bind it to group or team?
Today, you can do a number of different things, but to really get to the state that you're in, the question he's asking
not
is,
a
can,
page.
I take a classic team site that is a full site collection and groupify it? Mm-hmm. We've talked about that, certainly, and I think there will be more to come soon. The interesting thing is we've already modernized a lot of the team site, just to be clear on the phase that we're at. The classic team site currently today in SharePoint Online has a modern document library, a modern list, a modern site contents page, But so we're working on, you know, different modern aspects within, oh, the modern pages. You can create modern pages and you can create a modern page and deem it your home page. But that doesn't mean that it has a shared calendar, a shared inbox of this and that. So groupifying it, the biggest amount of work will be, how do we take your permissions model in your classic team site and map it to the group's permissions model, which is pretty simplified. And so the team is really working. What does that look like? Opting in, verifying that, yes, that going from A to B, I'm intact with how I'd like my site collection to be accessed. And it also applies to all the other workloads. We don't think it'll be a stretch of the imagination for the 80% to just say, it looks good the way that we'll map and model. But we want to give you the choice, obviously, with all your security groups and different levels and permissions model. If you really know what you're doing there, it is much more complex than the simplified model of groups.
So if you get it down to a PowerShell commandlet, I want the commandlet to be groupify-sp-teamsite.
Make it happen.
Okay, I like it. I like it. No, I thought Mimi was going to come in there somewhere.
I want to make my team site a groupie.
That's right.
Yeah, we in the marketing department have outlawed groupification and groupify. But I don't know. This feedback is pretty strong.
When you create a new team, you can pick an existing group, though, that it goes with instead of it creating a new one.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. Are you interested in all things happening in Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, BI, SharePoint, or .NET? Look them up on Valid.nl.
Pretty also an additional level of complexity that I found is if you've already got like an Azure AD Sync, like what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I've had quite a few people create O365 groups that have identically named traditional Exchange DLs, and they get upset because people don't send to the right one. Mm-hmm. And so.
No, my favorite was when they announced groups. A friend of mine in England had been working with K through 12s. And so you have sixth graders who are able to create groups. Because at the time when they were prototyping it, it was anybody's free.
We call those clicks.
Yeah, anybody can create it. So one of these smarty pants created a group named after the principal. So if you went into the gal, if you brought up an email and tried to send an email to the principal, you had the option to send it to, you know, matt.mcdermott@myk12.com or .edu. And it went to his group instead. So he started getting all this email that people thought they were sending to the principal, funneled into his group, and then he invited all his friends.
Oh. Those darn kids. Yeah. Get off my lawn.
Yeah.
I wanted to weigh in really briefly because it's been asked a couple of times just now. So literally just this past week, we did announce that there is such a thing as a soft delete for Office 365 groups, which means that that group stays around and is retained for a 30-day period. In which case, in that 30-day period, if you decided, whoa, we didn't need to delete that group, you can leverage a PowerShell commandlet now to restore the group. So effectively, it just sets a flag that says the group is marked for deletion. But so you don't have to worry about, from an administrative perspective, that I didn't accidentally really, really, really mean to click that button to hit delete. It'll actually retain the group.
Nice. Get him a red cape.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Notes from the field.
I don't know what's going to happen with Flow, but SharePoint Designer doesn't have any new versions. There is no SharePoint Designer 2016. There's no more development on SharePoint Designer workflows, and so they're phasing that out. So Flow is what they are expecting to replace with SharePoint Designer workflows. So they're continually doing work and adding things to Flow and improving it. Just a couple of weeks ago, the Team Flows thing came out. So because that was one of the biggest complaint was that when I create a Flow, it's just for me. It's only my Flow and no one else can see it or work on it or run it. So Team Flows is huge. That just came out. That was a big thing that people asked for. You can save as and make copies of Flow. So yes, that is where all the investment is being put right now. And that's where they're constantly adding new things and improving it. Adding different types of fields that it's compatible with and different services, et cetera. So does that answer your question? I don't know.
That's a database.
You just threw a SQL question at her.
Yeah.
What? And I like how she just said.
I know how to say I don't know. I don't know.
Then it's just BI.
So I have another group participation question where I want each of you some feedback. Okay.
for everybody to participate?
As in group, as in a collection of people, or okay. Is this thing online?
Or is this a team group?
Yeah, I don't know.
So we have, from SharePoint of old, we have the BDC. Mm-hmm. We have groups, we have teams, we have modern. I'm wondering what is the next commonly used phrase in IT that's going to be repurposed for a feature in Office 365?
If you just found flow.
Yeah.
Flow. Yeah. Flow is a little too common. Yeah, modern. What comes after modern? Postmodern.
Postmodern.
I'm going retro, man. I'm on prem. I'm retro.
We're going retro.
That's right.
That's it. Mm. I don't know. Are you asking us to guess?
No, I'm just making fun. Got a question back there.
Hey, just a quick question. So I do a lot of work with REST, and kind of my biggest gripe with it is manage metadata. So multiple is fine and get the label out, but I have to use like JSON to get a single select manage metadata field. Is that going to be fixed, or do you guys know if that's going to be updated? I feel like it's been out there since like 2014.
I know the question that you're asking. I don't have an answer for the fix, or is it going to be fixed? I thought, you know, maybe over here we could explain.
Didn't you
maybe
do a for REST session today, Eric?
Wait. A little bit on the how it works and what the problem is.
For me.
So we did like a lot of custom navs and things where we're pulling managed metadata. Multiple select for it is fine because I can get all the labels back. But for a single select, I either have to use JSON to go and get the label, or I have to chain calls to go get the label back. So I was just wondering if there's going to be some support to just get a single select label out of a managed metadata field with REST.
Well, we may need to talk about that offline because depending on how you structure that, are you doing this as a REST query or CSOM or what?
Doing it as a REST query. I've tried to do the expand and try to get the label out before, and I just have not been able to get it.
Yeah, that's a limitation in the REST API, and there's only so much coverage we have in that API at the moment. It's the least amount of coverage across the various APIs. So you can do that in CSOM by asking for that specific element as an include on when you get the term. That can be done. We just don't have it there in REST yet. So I can tell you from a broader perspective that most of the investment right now is over on the graph side for moving a lot of that stuff into the unified endpoints. Whether there is a lot of work going on with the REST APIs in general, whether we will get to that specific problem in terms of coverage near term, I couldn't begin to tell you. But the capability is certainly there behind the scenes in the API. It's just a matter of the team prioritizing those types of cases.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah.
Richard,
question,
do you have anything you can add to that? Yeah, I'm going to drag you in because you're the guy that solves the big problems.
My name's Richard. Hi.
Hi, Richard.
So,
I work for Microsoft in our developer experience group, pretty much exclusively on Office 365 development. So what I would say is that we are, if you look at the graph, we're following a lot of like modern API patterns around that. So doing a lot of things around expand. I mean, almost everything that we're coming out, like a new endpoint, like for instance, we just released, I think it's one of the coolest things in the graph is graph extensions where you can put your own schema updates to, basically you put your data in the graph on entities. And ultimately, like the way I get to that is just by sending an expand schema, like schema extension. So like we're following patterns for that, but you have to understand that, like Chuck said, is like the innovation is being done at the graph layer. That the graph is just a proxy through to all the individual endpoints. So at some point, we'd have to get it working in SharePoint for it to be surfaced up through the graph. So I don't know if that helps.
It does, but I guess my point is we've just released hybrid management, hybrid taxonomy, hybrid metadata. So getting us to embrace using metadata, pushing it between Office 365 and SharePoint on-prem, can we get managed metadata into the graph rather than investing in the REST endpoints, investing in the graph endpoints?
Well, which are REST endpoints.
Which is the layer, so that's what we're talking about.
Well, yeah, I think that's what, when we're talking about the REST endpoints, we're talking about just graph.
All the way through, yeah. Everybody raise your hands.
User voice. This is not user voice.
Yeah, it's user voice.
Yeah.
User group voice.
This is user group.
User group voice. User group team voice. That's right. Inside voice, outside voice.
And if
voice.
You say it fast enough, it's use your voice.
Bruce.
So my company's finally come up with a data classification scheme. And so I've noticed that within groups, Office 365 groups, You can set a data classification after the group is created, but for some reason, not when you're creating the group. And I'm curious, is that just thrown out there for experimentation purposes, or might it actually be useful one day, or are you trying to get more customer feedback on it?
So from the groups form, when you create a group from either Outlook, Microsoft Teams, Yammer, they don't prompt you for classification. I have to actually kind of figure out or ask why. Because it's one of the first things we did when we tried to modernize the Create site from the SharePoint home perspective. We ask all the same questions of Office 365 groups, name, public or private, but then we add the ability to classify your site. And there's three classifications, general purpose, internal only, or super secret. I can't remember the third one. Mm-hmm. And that will be something that you can then define a little bit more into the future where you can say, here are our policies per that site classification. But to be very frank, it is just to classify the site and the usage of the site. It doesn't cascade into the rest of the Office 365 group. But to kind of layer back on to my friend Christoph Feisinger, if you know him, that's one of the areas that he's certainly looking at, that even though it's the SharePoint team that's gone ahead and done it, that doesn't mean that it dictates the other teams will do it in a timely fashion. But I believe that what they see is how it applies to how people want to define the group. Some of it's just a visual component. Public or private, that's kind of what you get in all groups. But layered on top of that, if it's public or private and some level of high business impact, medium business impact, low business impact, there's a visual component, but then also policies that will get set. I mean, those same policies are not defined per each workload as being the same. It's known for us because we've been doing it for eons. And it was sort of more the question, when are you going to do it for the modern experience? And so now that starts for us already. But it's not the exact carbon copy the same for all groups. So it's the different form per different workload. And they haven't yet signed up to do it.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand that. So it's going to be added at group creation. And Christoph is working on some actual policies to do something with that information or at least get it more exposed within the group and maybe the underlying team side as well?
I think the phase that it's at is they've definitely heard the feedback across governance, creation, deletion, and of course from an e-discovery perspective or those types of audit and control scenarios. I want the group visibility to be more than just public or private. I want to be able to classify the type of data that's in this. What type of email can be sent here? What type of calendar? I mean, it gets a little thin when you get to some of the content types. But effectively, it's to map to the same thing you would think about a SharePoint site. What kind of data can be stored here? If it is true, what kind of conversations could we have? And I think if you think from an audit perspective, all content is open for audit. And I think it would map to those scenarios, of which I completely am not the right subject matter expert. But I do know that that team is looking to see how can they have a more unified way to classify the group and then everything that falls underneath it. We just jumped ahead because we had a customer base that required it more than the email customer base.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
A follow-up to Mark Flow. Is there a way that today can you run in a service account or you still have to run with someone's account?
If you logged into Flow, flow.microsoft.com, as the service account, then okay. You could go to My Flows and create Flows. And then you could also, any flows that anybody creates, they can go to the little share icon and share them with other people. That way, when those people go to Flow, to the website, they will see it under Team Flows, and then any of those people will be able to work on it.
Okay.
And then, except you don't have expiring accounts, right? So that service quote and service account is just a user account. When the password expires, the Flow stuff.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But will that require a license? Like
yes.
Any kind of license?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then next one is just to.
Or you could just create, any user could create one and share it with that.
Yeah. But if they leave, what happened was there was one created, the person left, and the account was deactivated, and then Flow didn't work. I thought, why did it not work? And then because account has been deactivated. Mm-hmm. So that's why we wanted to create a service account, but wanted to know if it will count against license.
It has to have a license
to
run the Flow.
Okay.
He's asking for a friend.
Yeah. Asking for a friend.
That was for you. You got your answer, right? And then another one is, can I create a Flow and make that as a template? And then for a future, I kind of base that. That will be a base, and then when any future Flow I create, I can say, oh, create that as a base. Can I do that?
You can do click a Flow and click save as and just save it as something else. So you're
Underscore template, underscore approval workflow. Yeah. Then it goes to the top.
And then me, right?
Me, me, me.
That's right.
Template one, template two, template.
So Laura, a question for you, if I can.
Go ahead, Brian.
So I dipped my toes in the Power Apps waters not long after it first came out and found that they were pretty shallow at first, which I understand.
That's an interesting word. Yeah.
But that's okay because, you know, we're having all these new services coming out of Office 365. So my struggle has been as a web developer, web mobile first is cool. Power Apps I'm struggling with. Where do you put Power Apps in a maturity model? Where do you see a sweet spot? Where do you see a roadmap? What are you counseling your clients and what kind of consultations are you doing for your clients with Power Apps?
That is very interesting. Maturity model, I'd say, I don't know, 75% I'd say that to where I feel like I could use it with just all the time, just with everything. The way I talk to my customers, because I have customers who want to do forms now, like today, and Power Apps is not going to cut it for a lot of them just because of just some of the field types that it doesn't work with and list types that it doesn't work with. And you'd have to really do a lot of workarounds to just do kind of some pretty simple things. And then also the learning curve is pretty steep for all those little functions that you have to know and understand and know where to put them in. So then if I'm going to go ahead and do a Power App for a customer and then hand it to them, then how are they going to manage it from then on? And they have to know how to work with that kind of interface. So I have that conversation where I talk to them and kind of explain what I just explained and then talk about some third-party products. And I have a certain third-party product that I absolutely love and I've gotten all my customers to buy and we use it for absolutely all of our forms. They are here. They have a booth. Anyway.
Lay it on us, Laura.
Infowise. Infowise Ultimate Forms. So yeah, they have a booth. I love them. I even signed up as a partner. I resell it and I'm not going to do a whole sales spiel, but I love it a lot.
Self-promotion limit.
Yeah. So, just reach your limit.
But I have customers that want to do forms today, and that's what they buy. And this Power App's it's not really ready.
Okay. So on the workflows, I'm running SharePoint 2013 on Windows NT 4.5. I'm kidding. But I have workflows.
Certification in that.
So I have workflows that we built in Info Designer. Could they be converted over to Flow?
Not Info Designer.
SharePoint Designer.
No, they can't.
I know that answer.
So I'd have to recreate.
Yeah. So you get two screens. SharePoint Designer's on this side. Flow's on that side.
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you.
It works. Totally reliable. Works every time, even on your machine.
Yep. Yeah. You had a question over here.
Yes. Within the context of Power Apps again, I've seen the term collection used a lot. And I guess could somebody talk a little bit more about what that is?
Collection? Do you mean environment?
No. I'm not exactly sure. It says something about make collections and like create a collection. It seems almost like it's a data source.
I think it's a variable
type. Is it a variable type?
Where I can have a collection variable type that I could query like a list and get back and bind to a collection type. And then that would be something that you iterate through in the flow.
Right? So then you have a for each. You have a for each that comes after that. So
that's all I know.
You get you get an array of objects and then you have a for each after that that would enumerate through that.
Yeah, I think I may not be saying the right thing, but one thing important to know about both Flow and Power Apps is they don't just think about SharePoint. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of first-party integration with them when they're great partners and lots of cool stuff to come and listen for May 16th for sort of the next question.
Would you go on about let everybody know what's going on May 16th?
Yeah, just to finish the thought, you know, they think about a lot of different sources of where information might live. It's not just SharePoint. So, but certainly we love that they think about SharePoint, and so we're happy that they think about a list, they think about libraries. Just recently, you know, they just announced on libraries. Broader, just to answer Matt's question, on May 17th is a big event called the SharePoint Virtual Summit. Thank you. And it's, if you want to get there and register, it's just aka.ms/SharePoint Summit. And that will take you to register. It's free. And really, it's just more of a tracking mechanism if you don't mind getting hammered with one or two emails after the event. We promise not to inundate. But it really is a time when Jeff Teeper, who is the lead of the SharePoint and OneDrive engineering, will pull together his team and showcase what it is they're going to be working on and delivering in this next 6 to 8 months. And we did it last year. If you want to kind of see the breadth of what we did, on May 4th of last year, we shared with the world everything that we were going to be delivering by end of year, to which we, minus one feature that took us a couple extra weeks into the 2017 year, we were able to deliver all of that. It's all in production now. And certainly some of that was on-prem as well, which was feature pack one. So expect a lot of information on May 17th, a lot of Office 365 integration, SharePoint Online, SharePoint On-Prem.
One of your attendees is fact-checking you. Your slide said the 16th. Well, is it the 17th?
We said, Eric Shupps, I believe, said May 17th. I believe it's May 16th.
While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as the leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more.
So
Eric said no such thing.
Play back the recording. Play back the recording. The site.
What time zone are you in?
The site says 17.
In Australia, it's the 17th. Yep.
I can pretty much assure you, if my brain.
Just go to AKA.
Oh no! If you do AKA.
AKA.
Oh, did I have it printed wrong on my
chat?
Now you're freaking me out.
60. Be ready on the 12th. You'll catch it no matter what.
That's right. Go to the AKA link today, and then you'll be signed up, and we'll ping you when it's going to be.
What is the link again?
It's aka.ms, just a bit.ly, aka.ms/ SharePoint Summit, all one word.
Question at the back, Jim?
Just, is all your information, contact information, available on a website somewhere for this meeting?
I don't know.
Brian Kinsella can answer that question.
Just go to our meetup site, which is Austin Office 365 SPUG.us, or just go to meetup and look up Austin Office 365, and we have your personal email and cell phone, I think, Mark.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Please put me on speed.
That you may want to
dial.
No, we don't, but we have nice Twitter handles and blog.
Plus, the SP TechCon site has speaker bios on everybody here.
Yep.
All my emails and calls get forwarded to Bill Baer, so go for it.
If you have a tech support question, please press one. Question at the back.
With all of the uncertainty of libraries that accept incoming email, and if not going to Office 365, what is your recommendation of a replacement?
Flow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Flow can look at us there and look at your inbox and do something. It can get triggered when a mail arrives. And then it can take the attachment in that email or the whole email and put it in a library or put it, you know, do whatever with it. So
it's the NSA flag.
Yeah, groups do have a mailbox too.
Yeah. To try to figure out a way to create like a sub project team or something like that.
I think one important thing to consider is that both the Exchange team and the SharePoint team, the Exchange team is moving away from public folders. They've been pretty clear about that. And the SharePoint team has been pulling away from email enabled lists.
Right.
But if you look at what we built in the 2013 timeframe, there was integration between Exchange and SharePoint. It was called the Site Mailbox.
Right.
But now an even better solution in terms of...
That's going away, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So the real solution before you get into individual mails moving in from one to the other is leave email where it needs to be. If you create a group, you get a group inbox, which is an Exchange inbox. And anything that flows through that is, of course, going to be accessible to all the group members. Okay. And, you know, all the content. Hopefully it starts and stays in SharePoint. But it also could be an attachment that's sent to the group from somewhere, maybe not a known source. And you can easily put that into SharePoint. So the document should go into the right place. The .msg thing that used to be the email-enabled list certainly is more of just a file in the Exchange Online inbox for the group.
Going back to the Teams deal and teamifying an already existing SharePoint site.
Classic site. Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to create that team in a specific taxonomy URL? Because right now it just gets created and it gets its own
URL.
Yep. If you use,
could be kind of in with the rest of the groups.
Yep. So there's kind of two things. That one thing is missing is just when I create a group, the site collection is invisible to the SharePoint Online admin from the user interface. It's accessible via PowerShell, as anything in this world is accessible via PowerShell. I actually think I can get a bag of Doritos right now using PowerShell. But
that'll get me to use PowerShell.
Working on it. Dash cool rants equals true.
That's right. But the lack of the user interface, certainly the site exists, the site collections exist, and they are known, and you can access them. And because of the joke, I spaced a little bit on what my answer was going to be, and I apologize. Just repeat 2 seconds and I'll catch right back up. Oh yeah, sorry. The other thing that we don't support in SharePoint Online are managed paths. So if you're happy with sites or teams, we create our own certainly for different workloads, but we don't make them accessible. If you want to today, from a classic site perspective, create a specific path or put them in a specific place, as long as you're okay with sites and teams, you can create a custom form with custom logic using custom templates, which just sounds more troubling than it should be. It's really a supported scenario. And in fact, Richard could probably point you to the GitHub solution that we put out there. That really is just a unique form, fill out what it is. It triggers then either a job to IT or a job to our service to create the site collection with the template you've chosen. The limitation right now is you can't use the group template to provision a whole group in our create site flow, but you certainly can use PowerShell to create groups that then create them in the way that you want. I think parts and pieces are there for you, probably not the solution that you 100% want, but I bet you could get pretty close if you really required a custom form to create and to provision in a custom way. As long as you're okay with our paths that we made available, then the answer is close to yes.
So just to be clear, you can use any managed path you want as long as it's site
your team. That's correct. Just like vanity URLs.
You can get any web framework you want.
Question.
I have a question. I'm somewhat new to SharePoint. In fact, in the past, I've taken care of NT and servers and Exchange. But
so you got his joke earlier.
Yeah.
That one went over my head.
But it's been a long time. And I'm new to SharePoint. I'm new to Office, the Office 365 ecosystem, I guess you'd call it. And it occurs to me that there doesn't seem to be like a unified vision. I mean, it's like from the nomenclature.
That's not a newbie question.
Cross function.
Yeah. You have to be in chair 10 years to be able to say that. You can't just go.
I'm hoping you tell me that I'm wrong and I'm confused and I just need to go look at this one link and everything will be okay. But it's really confusing. I feel like I'm drinking from 5 hoses at the same time, and it's just it's a little overwhelming.
Yep. So I'll start you with what I think is a half good answer for you. The reality is we have a new great leader. And it does sometimes take that to change in a significant way. But there are really two people. One is kind of the unsung hero, and one is the one that everybody sees now that isn't Steve Ballmer. Nothing against Steve Ballmer, but he certainly, you know, was more involved in getting the business off the ground, whereas I think Satya is really involved in rationalizing it and making it a great experience no matter where you're coming in and out of. Things like we've been talking a lot about tonight, groups, teams, you know, all those new interfaces is really trying to wrap around, you don't know of SharePoint, Exchange, and Skype, and other. You just have a nice interface that works the way that you want to work. But the unsung hero is a guy named Rajesh Shah, and he's an amazing engineer that really drives his teams to think twice before they just run off and do something. That doesn't mean he catches everything, but it'll happen less and less over time. And his big focus is to really think, who owns what? And so when you think of simple things like content services, SharePoint is where you put your content. SharePoint is where you put your content. Yammer used to have a place where you put your content. They're moving to our store. Exchange used to commonly attach emails in an old way. Now the modern way is put it in SharePoint, send a link to somebody. And those kind of patterns you'll see are more true, and fewer services will be duplicative. But to rationalize the UI across all these products that have been in market for 15 years, it's a harder problem than we would like to admit, but it is just that. It is taking us time to make it less, feels like it's more unified experience.
So it's all coming together, right? That's what you're saying.
Well, look at it 2 or 3 years ago, which maybe that is the newbie part of the question. We have made significant progress since what used to be called BPOS. It really was a product running in the cloud. Oh, that was a different reaction than I thought.
Well, I think
that was SharePoint running on somebody else's server.
Yeah.
I think to make matters a little more complicated, I'm also new to the company. That I mean, I've been here with the company for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And what I'm finding is that, I was going to say we, I didn't have anything to do with this highly successful company, but they're one of the biggest automotive manufacturers in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And so we have CAD people and embedded engineers, and we don't really need mobile for a lot. And when I went and looked at the Power App, I'm looking at all this mobility, and I'm like, this is kind of cool, but, you know, I mean, we'll have a use for it, but it seems like, I just hope we're not heading in that direction at the expense or at the exclusion of people who actually work on large screens. And
yep.
You know what I mean? It's like, is that being addressed at all?
I think, I mean, you look at the entire stack and it doesn't mean you have to use the entire stack. I'm a solo person, entrepreneur that uses Office 365 and I use a fraction of what's available to me. I don't use Teams because it doesn't work for me. I don't use Planner because it doesn't work for me. I don't use OneDrive because...
It's OneDrive.
Oh, wait a minute. I'll defend OneDrive too.
I didn't say whatever
somebody
else.
You won't try and defend Sync.
I will defend Sync actually.
Oh, we got to go outside.
But I mean, there's you pick and choose what works best. I mean, it's the best of breed thing. Teams doesn't work for my scenario. Slack works much better for my scenario. Doesn't mean that Teams isn't a good product or it doesn't mesh with the rest of the stuff. It just means it doesn't work for my business scenario. And that's stuff that they've heard the feedback. I had the opportunity to talk to Jeff Teeper last week, the guy that basically owns SharePoint and OneDrive, and said the same thing. It was just like, it's the external sharing. I can't really use it. And he's absolutely, we hear it. It's a big thing that they're trying to focus on. So, I mean, you look at, you know, everything you get for what you pay for it, it's a ridiculous value. Granted, I'm probably, like personally, I use like 40% of it or maybe 30% of it, but it still is an incredible value.
Yeah, I think one way to answer it, and it really is kind of there's the what you do or don't use, what's the right scenario. So maybe you haven't come across the part that works, or you've come across the part that you'd like to have and it's not there yet. But specifically, if you think about SharePoint, Project, you know, anything that in the past almost had no mobile experience whatsoever, really challenging to step into and get Power Apps to be mobile first. By the way, that is one of our product truths, cloud first, mobile first, you know. And so we really had to start there. That is the harder nut to crack. And just stay tuned May 17th. I think you'll start to see the bigger screens. 12.
What? I'm so excited. 16.
Sometime in May. If you just wait, it'll be on demand anyway. So.
Yeah, that's right.
So we've got time for one more question. I think I've got the mic up here.
The mobility aspect is really targeted at road warriors and senior executives to convince them of the value of the product.
You mean you're saying that Microsoft is targeting the people who spend the money on the service as users to make sure that they get what they need so they feel like they're spending their money wisely as opposed to us? Is that what you said?
Business workers.
Wow, I didn't understand. I didn't interpret it that way.
You did?
I did.
My answer, and I think we just go down the line on this one. There's a saying, and I don't know how common it is outside of Microsoft. It's not an acronym, but it's the crawl, walk, run. And there's a lot of new experiences that we have to start somewhere. And again, if you look at over the last 2 or 3 years, progress in some of these spaces that started off really thin or shallow, I think was one of the other terms, they have gotten more and more deep. And if you don't have a good set of bogs or waders or a full wetsuit, and I don't mean that as a joke, like really there is depth to what we're planning. And there's execution that sometimes starts maybe not in the depth that you want. But I believe that we'll get there. And there's lots of solutions, partners, lots of legacy in terms of there's still lots of capabilities on premises if you're not ready for online for certain things. And it, you know, maybe is just more to review and then to sign off of. But I think definitely keep looking every 3 to 6 months. What progresses have been made? Are they ready yet for me?
I think you've got a great point though, because, you know, 80 to 90% of forms that I work on that people just need to fill out in the office, they're not going to be something you'd fill out on your phone. It's, you know, like a employee requisition or, you know, travel request or I don't know. So, and a lot of times with forms that people have filled out, they just want the part that the executives have to do, the approvals, they just want that part to be mobile somehow. So that's the real world. But yeah, I mean, he's right. I mean, they're trying. Like people like mobile, and so they develop it for mobile. But they're getting all the pieces in there eventually. Are we going?
No,
down? We're all addressing.
You don't have to.
My perspective on this is, whatever you want to do, we probably have a SKU for that, right? Mm-hmm. So if you want to use Project Web Server right, or project web apps, and you want to stay on-premise and you want to service those engineers in your environment, that SKU is called on-premises, right? We have it. It's fully supported. It's a mature product. There's a lot of functionality there. You don't have to use Power Apps and Flow and all the stuff in the cloud if that doesn't work for you. If you don't need the mobile experience, don't use it. If you want those types of experiences, we have them. Okay, some of them are new, but look at the size and the breadth and the scope of the problem that they're trying to solve here. Right? There's so much functionality in and across this product space. There is no other vendor that comes anywhere close to having the maturity level that we have in Office 365 and SharePoint. Nobody. So trying to crack that particular nut and say, okay, but I want this thing over here. All right, we'll get there, but first we have to solve the 80% problem when we release a new feature and give it to the people we think are going to use it the most and solve the most use cases. The good news is in the cloud, we used to have, for those who are new to the space, right? It was 3 years before we ever heard what the new features were going to be, and we didn't know if they were going to solve our problem. And if they didn't, we had to wait 3 more years, right? Now it's 3 to 6 months to will something new get developed. There's no way in 3 to 6 months to make a product that's going to be deep and wide and solve all the challenges for that particular space. They've completely changed the ship to say we're going to ship faster, we're going to ship less stuff incrementally, but it's going to be more often and it's going to be faster. So you have to have some patience with that. I think the real gem in there is that they're now listening to the customer's feedback and you can actually make an impact. If a feature ships 3 years and you don't like it and you give feedback, it's 3 more years before you ever know if they listened to you or not. Now you'll know within a few months whether they're going to do something with that. And we have to take into perspective that what our use case is not necessarily the same use case for how many millions of users do we have on Office 365. Now, it may be really, really important to us, but if it's not important to the rest of the user base, it may not get the attention that we want, in which case I'll go back to the beginning of my statement and say, we have a fully customizable product that you can do anything you want to make it sing and dance and do a jig. It's called on-premises. Buy it, install it on a server, and do whatever you want with it if the service isn't working for you.
That's right. And let
can I do
and
this
be
for
vocal.
Eric?
No, that's good. That's good. But I think also being vocal about why you're not going to deploy the features is as important as to why it doesn't work for you. I mean, just letting Microsoft, giving the feedback to Microsoft as to why PWA isn't working for me. I mean, Richard and many of the guys that work with his team, they go in and find, they listen to why it's not working to make sure that you, like you said, maybe I'm not doing it right. I mean, I had a conversation with Mark today. I knew I wasn't doing it right because it was a new feature and it wasn't doing what I thought it was supposed to do. And he showed me the way that it's supposed to go. What's the use case that they're approaching right now? Show them what you want to do. And maybe 6 months from now, that's the product it becomes.
Just a real quick comment. Amen, Eric. It is a completely new Microsoft and the revs. I kind of regret the shallow water thing because it was right after Power Apps came out. And the revving, the cycling is just unheard of in Microsoft's history. And number two, as far as what to look at, what might become legacy, et cetera, look at the roadmap. Mm-hmm. I keep my eyes on the roadmap, which is, what's the URL?
And the easiest way to get there is office.com/roadmap.
If I will tell you this, if that team can recognize their vision around the extensibility story for the SharePoint framework, I think you will be very, very happy with the set of tools that you have available to, yes, it's a developer story for all the non-devs that just, you know, want to next finish stuff and do things in a wizard, but it will be there and you will have those capabilities if we can bring that vision to fruition. I think we wanted AC to, did you want to get AC's thoughts before?
Yeah. There are none. There are none.
Those are the best.
Time. I deferred my time to you.
So we are pretty much at time. One last comment?
Kind of wanted to play on this a little bit more and say that those people that are already using current existing products and platforms who are thinking about migrating to 360 and online web development, if you guys are going to be pushing that direction, you need to have a really good migration path for existing data like Designer and other things that you're obsoleting so that you're not forcing us to recreate this stuff simply because we've migrated onto the new platform. Give us a transition path, a migration path, something that allows us to click and go and still be in business without recreating the world. So the kind of time that he's talking about and investing is a real big problem.
Yeah, there's
third-party vendors that do that.
But that's so much more money that I have to invest. I'm already investing in cloud and everything else. This is huge.
I've
got to get justification for that.
There's a lot of great partners and people to talk to. And I would say if he's still here, I don't think he's here tonight, but there's a gentleman named Bob German who does a lot of great thinking, as do a lot of partners and MVPs. But specifically, I've seen him speak a lot on how to prepare for the cloud when you're even still on-prem. And he thinks about customizations. How would you build today for on-prem to make yourself a little bit more cloud future-proof? And it's really interesting thinking. He also takes into consideration there are things you can't do. There are things that won't migrate easily. But one thing that we've done a ton of, which is more of just a, hey, we feel the pain, because we have 55 extremely large customers that have been in SharePoint Online dedicated for years, very long time, and effectively dedicated was like an on-prem farm. We have successfully, and I'll give you the time frame of roughly 2.5 years, moved them all to the multi-tenant space. Very large, highly custom portals, high custom workflows that are in process. And of course, they're very interested in the new stuff. They were a little bit forced, so different than an on-prem customer. And there's a lot of review that went into a tool called SPCAF that just looks at what is your solution and how can it move to the cloud. Some of it is rewrite, which you don't want to hear. Some of it is it's already been built in the cloud, so use different. It's a thing maybe that you didn't have in version 2010, but we built it sort of out of box in 2016 or now in online. But there's a lot of great ways to plan for the future. There's a lot of great analysis tools that would give an indication of the hopefully 60-40, 70-30. And then there isn't going to be the magic tool for everything no matter what. And that's not an excuse. I think it's just pure reality. But it's certainly a fair point and feedback taken.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.